614, hot today, highs near 90, turning windy tomorrow, highs of 86, and get ready, here comes the cold front. Lows Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, 52 North Shore, 58 South Shore. Highs Wednesday only of 70. And then Wednesday night, Thursday morning, lows of 44 on the North Shore, 56 on the South Shore. And this could stay that way for a couple of days until really the weekend when it starts to warm up a little bit. So that's good news. Bad news is, well, what happened yesterday in the Dome. Mike Dettelier joins us now, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tommy.
Did you in any way foresee what happened yesterday before, you know, as we hear that psychic foolishness, but did you in any way think it was going to turn out like that?
No, not to that extent, but, man, you look at it when a team rushes for 277 yards and averages 7.9 yards a carry, you know, you ain't winning many games. And talent to me is an effort thing, okay? And that's all about effort. And you didn't see it yesterday defensively. It was a crazy first half, though, where it was totally dominating the first quarter by the Bucs. Mm-hmm. And man, then the Saints came running back with it. I don't understand, and even today with a win by the Bucs, why you got away from rushing the football. Mm-hmm. You know, because Baker Mayfield was hot in the first quarter, but he cooled off big time in the second quarter. You know, why you got away from the run if you're averaging 8 yards a pop? Again, that's minute, but I just thought it was a poor overall effort in the second half, and you got blown out, and you got physically beat on both sides of the football.
So that's what's got me scratching my head, is how can they play like they did in the first half and then have a lack of effort in the second half? And, you know, I got people texting, and I don't think anybody knows about, you know, St. Dennis Allen's lost the locker room. I don't know what's going on in the locker room, that this is a problem, that's a problem. I don't know. I'm not there. I can tell you that the tackling is poor, 16 missed tackles. That speaks for itself. But I don't understand how you can be so – and I'm so optimistic. Listen to Bobby at halftime. I was optimistic like he was. And then all of a sudden it goes to hell. How can that happen?
Well, that's why they play the game. Mm-hmm. But you know, this isn't the first time we've seen it. But, Tommy, I think when you start to sort of see an unraveling on your side of the field, okay, because defense is Dennis Allen's baby, mm-hmm. Okay? That's his part of the game on defense. We've seen this back-to-back weeks now. Back-to-back. The Bucs, what they did running the football and scoring touchdowns in the red zone, the Chiefs didn't do a lot of – they weren't great in the red zone. They sort of settled – for the field goal instead of the touchdown. But this is back-to-back weeks. Teams have moved the football up and down the field and rushed the ball on you. Now, I mean, that's never good when you start to lose your side of the ball. If this was you playing great defense and your offense wasn't scoring, that part is on Clint Kubiak and his offensive scheme, his play calling. But now this has swung dramatically the past couple weeks, because you look at the Eagles game, you couldn't cover Goddard, I get that, and you gave up a couple of big plays, but you gave up one touchdown. In Atlanta, you didn't give up any offensive touchdowns, zero. And now, you know, you see kind of the onslaught was what happened since then. That you've given up a lot of yardage, you got a lot of missed tackles, and it looked ugly, really ugly in the second half. And in watching it, you wondered a little bit about the effort. Mm-hmm. You can say, "Oh, my guys give great effort," okay, but you can convince your lying eyes that they're wrong. Because that was a terrible effort game in the second half with the Saints on defense.
So here's my question. If, say, for example, I know that tomorrow that I'm going to sit down with Diane Newman, my boss, and we're going to listen to every minute of what we do today, and she's going to say, oh, you did this right, you didn't do that right, wait, let's go back and listen to that again. I'm going to be doing my very, very best. And the only reason I bring that up is that's what happens when they watch tape of the game, right? So if I'm just sloughing or not paying attention or, you know, not prepared for whatever it is that I have to do, it's going to be apparent. That's certainly going to be the case with game video from the NFL. So how can there not be the – that's what I don't understand. Do you get what I'm saying?
I understand perfectly. And not only are you having that tape out for your team, everybody else sees it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the thing about, well, they've given up. Okay, if I want to continue this profession, which pays me a lot of money, a lot,
mm-hmm.
am I going to put out bad tape for somebody else to see it? Okay, you got to think about that, that not only are you performing for your team, but if I'm not here next year or in 2 weeks or whatever, I'm, you know, that tape's out there for everybody else to see that I'm not doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a little bit different than maybe, I would say, 95% of the professions in this world, where a lot of people really don't see your prep time or what you do. They may see the end result, mm-hmm. but they don't see the prep time and everything involved with it. For a Saints or an NFL team, you're seeing that in front of your very eyes.
And you might be able to.
Other employees see it, too.
You might be able to fool maybe the fans, but the people that are in the profession, they know if you're prepared or not. They know what the hell you're doing and what you're supposed to be doing and what you're doing or not doing. So let me take a break.
Bingo.
Mike. We'll pick it up when we come back here. 621, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Mike Dettelier, who's got a long day. He's nice enough to join us early. Then he'll be second-guessing live on location, Silver Slipper Casino in beautiful Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. They're going to size up the Saints' Week 6 performance against the Bucks. Rather, recap LSU's battle with Ole Miss, 6:30. Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Mike Haas, Bobby Hebert, and a special guest. Then followed at 7, Director of Team Nutrition Jamie Meeks. The Monday Night Football, Bills, the Jets on WWLAMFM.com, live on the free Odyssey app. The Jets with a new coach, but those of you thinking that's going to happen here, I don't think it will. We'll see when we return. 6:22 now, traffic, WWL. 6:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Mike Dettelier, talking about the Saints' debacle in the Dome yesterday. I think that's accurate. Mike, can you remember last time the Saints got just beat up and beat down this badly?
It's been quite a few years, Tommy. Mm-hmm. You've seen this type of whipping. And so, you know, we got sort of spoiled with, you know, with Peyton throughout the years, and that they really played well in the Dome. But, man, that was a real beatdown, physically beatdown. And this isn't a team that's really noted for running the football.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other part about it. The Bucks are not known league-wide as a team that really sort of pounds the rock on you. And so that really sort of raises the eyebrows a little bit that they were able to come in here and do it. And it's not like, you know, they had that reputation coming in.
You know, I was watching this yesterday, and I think of an analogy. You know how sometimes you see these shows, these medical shows, where the doctor says, I got to find the bleeder. I got to find where the bleeder is and stop it. Well, the NFL is like that, except they got to find the bleeder so they can slice it wide open, right?
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, if you see something that's not being done right, you go after it. Okay, this isn't Pee Wee football or junior high school ball. This is professional sports. And when something's not going right, they attack it. And not only kind of break the link of the chain, they want to break the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw it yesterday. They went after it in the second half of that game, And the other thing, too, defensively, and we'll talk, I think, a little bit more about it, certainly about Spencer Rattler, but they didn't let him cut the field off in half. Like, he had success in the second quarter of that game because he was kind of rolling out, and he would throw, but the field was cut in half, and he was throwing at a designated area. Todd Bowles said, enough of that. Mm-hmm. We coming after him. We making him move. And that's how you shut that down real quick.
And that's one thing that really bugged me. It appeared to me, and you know, you never know, right, from the TV shots. I don't know what the hell was going on, but it appeared at some point as though Todd Bowles and some of the Tampa Bay staff was kind of laughing at the Saints and the effort. Did you get that or not?
I think they knew that what they had, they were going to continue to see, and why shouldn't I continue to go after it?
Mm-hmm.
They knew the Saints could not stop them running the football.
Kind of like a cat that ate the canary look, I guess is what I'm looking
at. Yeah, it's almost like, okay, we got them now, and we're not letting off the accelerator. Okay, because they're not known for a team to put up tons of points on an opponent. And, man, they just kept putting their foot on the accelerator. And, hey, am I in that spot? I do it too.
Yep, and for those that, again, I think everybody understands this, but the NFL, it's like, again, a doctor, they're going to, a paramedic, they're going to find the wound. They're going to find, okay, where is it here? Okay, good. Let me put my heel in it. That's pretty much the way the NFL is, and it's a competitive thing, and it's professional sports. It's the way it should be. Take a break. Talk with Mike Moore when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Mike Dettillier. He'll be second-guessing with Bobby Hebert from the Silver Slipper Casino this evening, 4 o'clock in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. So Colin Sanders quoted as saying, I could have rushed, talking about himself, for 60, 70 yards off broken tackles. We need to tackle better, start a fixing a problem, tackling better than everything else will come. But we're not going to stop nobody if we're not tackling the ball when we hit them the first time. I don't know what he means by tackling the ball, but before you go for the ball, you got to make the tackle, right? But either way, 16 missed tackles yesterday, 12 against the Chiefs, 10 before the Falcons. The NFL is watching, and they know, so you got a short week. I don't know. You know, Dennis Allen was talking about bad angles to the ball technique. I don't know how you change that in 3 days, or right?
Because you don't. You don't. I mean, basically, you know, you got a day to heal. You go through the walkthroughs. You're not practicing tackling on a Wednesday before a Thursday game. Okay, that is all about effort, Tommy. I'm just telling you, that's what tackling is all about, effort. It's not like the first time they've made a tackle in a game. It's an effort situation. And so you can talk about bad angles, and sometimes that does happen. You got athletes that can make you look bad. But yesterday, that really wasn't the case. A great example was Baker Mayfield throws the football 3 yards downfield to Chris Godwin. And it was like a pinball. He went and hit, or he got guys that hit him, maybe three or four, but none of them even wrapped up trying to tackle him. It was like a pinball shot. Bing, bang, and then he's out into the open field. That isn't about the right angle. They had the angle on him. But the effort part wasn't good. It doesn't matter how you cut it and how you sugarcoat it. It was all about effort. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen this, and that is not a good sign when that happens on the head coach's side of the ball.
So why? First of all, you know, I like to turn down the sound and listen to Mike and Deuce and Jeff Nowak on the sideline. And when you sync it up, you realize they're seeing the same thing that you're seeing. And you could hear the resignation in Mike Haas's voice, and he'll score because he kind of, you could see it. That it's like nobody stop him. Where does the effort, why no effort? That's what I'm asking. I don't understand that, because we started this hour by talking about it's on tape. Everybody can see it. You don't want your peers to see this. Oh, and by the way, it's on television as well. So why no effort? I don't understand this. I can't, my mind won't.
That's the mystery of sports. It really is. That's the mystery part of it. It's the same thing last week. The Jets fire Robert Saleh. Okay, Woody Johnson has never been, as an owner, has never done that before in his life. Never. The last time the Jets had a coach that didn't finish the season, you got to go back to 1976. Mm. Lou Holtz, he wasn't fired. He quit on the Jets, I think in late November, early December of that year. Somebody gets in their ear, okay? Somebody gets into the ear of the – and they're all billionaires now, so they don't take advice from most people. Somebody got into Woody's ear and said, hey, listen, Saleh's got to go. Well, that somebody's Aaron Rodgers because it was making him look bad. Saleh's defense was playing pretty good for the Jets, but their offense stunk. So if you think that the change at head coach is going to change the Jets around, you're kidding yourself. I think there's a certain mentality because players control the locker room. A lot of people think it's the coach that controls the locker room. That might be the case in middle school or high school, but in the pros, it's the players that control that locker room. And that's not going to change with the Jets. And it's all about leadership. It's all about guys that are the leaders in the locker room. If anybody's going to change it, it's them. It's the players. It's not the coaches at this point. That they set the scheme. They set basically the tone. But it's all about players at the professional level.
So they're watching tape, right, of the game, or they're watching the effort on the field, the fellow players are, and at no point does somebody say, bruh, what are you doing? Come on, man. Right?
I'm sure it's being said. But, you know, the worst thing is for some of the leaders on this team, a lot of them are injured. A lot of them aren't even on the field. And so that becomes the other issue with it at this point. Everybody's got injuries. I mean, look what happened to the Lions yesterday to lose their best defensive player for the year in Aiden Hutchinson. Now the other leaders on defense, they've got to pick up the slack. It's not next man up. There ain't no next man on that team that can do what Hutchinson can do. But it is all about players, Tommy. And I think that is the kind of misperception about the NFL. Coaching does matter. It does matter. But it is also about those guys in the locker room. The leaders in that locker room saying, this isn't going to be acceptable. Either you do it this way or you shouldn't be in that lineup. I'll talk to the coach about it.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I want to talk about the Rattler, Spencer Rattler as well. 6:51, 9 till 7. Quick look at traffic, WWL. All right, 6:56, 4 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Mike Dettillier. Mike, let's talk about, and just real quick, before we talk to you again on Friday morning, the Saints will have played Denver and Sean Payton, and that's how short the week is, just to put it in perspective. But before we get to that, get to Spencer Rattler, I don't even know what practice looks like between now and then. You just walk through stuff, put in a game plan? Do you review tape?
Pretty much. You're going through walkthroughs. You're looking at tape. Any injuries you're trying to nurse through to get to Thursday. You're not out there practicing tackling. And it's not a full-fledged practice. You can't be. You're just coming off a game and you got another one. And so it's a real short week of watching film, getting prepared for the Broncos from a standpoint of game plan and sort of a walkthrough. It's not pads or anything like that.
I want to get to Spencer Rattler before we run out of time. Thoughts?
He played better than I thought he would. I will be honest with you. I got a 5-year-old granddaughter that could tell you, well, that's good and bad. Mm-hmm. Okay? Anybody, that's good and bad with veteran players. Mm-hmm. So you know it was going to happen to Spencer. But, man, he shows the arm talent, mm-hmm. confidence, a lot of self-confidence, and the ability to make a play off script. I thought he did a pretty good job with all of that. Now, pressure breaks the pipe. And that's what happened in the second half. They were sending more people than the Saints could block. And I'm talking about guys, Tommy, that weren't even touched. They were just running in. That puts a lot of pressure on you. But I was impressed with Spencer and his self-confidence, his arm talent, and his ability to make something happen when everything around him was starting to break down. I liked what I saw from Spencer Rattler yesterday.
So, looking ahead to Thursday night, I know Sean Payton's got the Broncos ready, I would think. Is Dennis Allen going to have the Saints ready?
Well, I think we're fixing the scene. Now, you're playing another rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because I've watched Bo Nix in Denver. There's good and bad with him. So, the stuff about, well, it's what I thought, good and bad. Well, anybody can say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be your effort defensively. This is going to be a defensive game because the Broncos are a good defensive team, and they tackle well. They really do. So you're going to have to bring your A game. And you're not going up against a guy with a lot of experience here is to force and kind of get turnovers. That has got to be a key for the Saints. Shorten the field for Spencer Rattler. And this team has got to find a running game. Has to. Because that's been the big difference from the first 2 weeks to what we see today. You had a running game. You got nothing in the running game today.
All right, head coach Dennis Allen, Sean Payton, advantage goes to?
Well, I know both of them want to beat one another, but I know Sean wants it really bad.
All right, Mike. We'll listen for you this afternoon, man. I appreciate your time. Always do. You know that, Mike Dettelier. He'll be on with Bobby Hebert today at 4 o'clock. Second guest live on location, Silver Slipper Casino, beautiful Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. They'll talk about LSU and the Saints, naturally, of course. And it's a Visit Pensacola Saints Coaches Show with Mike Haas, Bobby Hebert, and a special guest. And at 7, Director of Team Nutrition, Jamie Meeks, and Monday Night Football, Bills at the Jets, WLAMFM.com, and live on a free Odyssey app. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jeff Palermo about LSU and the amazing Whit Weeks. Back in a flash, WWL. 7:15. It was a sad day yesterday in the Dome, but it was a thrilling night in Baton Rouge Saturday night. It was a long night in Baton Rouge, but I'm going to tell you what, Jeff Palermo, how about them Tigers, huh?
What a ball game, Tommy. What a game.
Tell me, I don't even know where to start with this. I guess, you know, there are so many things that could have changed the game, maybe if what's the receiver's name, Tim? Trey Harris doesn't drop that ball on the second play of the game. Maybe
yes.
Things turn around.
Yeah. Well,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And Tim brought this point up, which is a good one. Maybe if Whit Weeks gets ejected, maybe Tigers don't win because this guy had what 18 tackles, which is
18
crazy.
Tackles. Yeah, and there was a spot in the game for those that don't remember or didn't see the game. There was a spot in the game where Whit Weeks was facing an ejection for a targeting penalty, a helmet to helmet hit that, thank goodness for LSU. It did not go against them after they looked at it on instant replay. They determined that the quarterback Jackson Dart was going down. Therefore, Whit Weeks' helmet went down and it was still helmet-to-helmet contact, but they didn't consider it malicious or intentional. So he stayed in the game and had a career night, 18 tackles. LSU's defense, I thought, was just fantastic. To me, that was the story of the game. I mean, the touchdown pass between Garrett Nussmeier and Kyron Lacy is another legendary play. You'll see that when you think about all the great highlights in Tiger Stadium. That one is going to go in there with so many of the other great touchdown passes that have taken place over the 100 years of that stadium. But it really was the LSU defense that kept them in the game until the offense can finally get on track. What a huge drive at the end of regulation by Garrett Nussmeier, converting a couple times on fourth down to get the ball into the end zone. And then on the first play of overtime, LSU decides to win it. with the touchdown pass to Kyron Lacy. But the six sacks on Jackson Dart. How about the in the red zone? Ole Miss just goes three of six. Not three of six as far as scoring touchdowns once getting into the red zone, but they only had three scores out of the six. So that was, to me, the big key in this game.
Yeah, Zay Alexander had a great game.
Yes.
Ashton Stamps had a good game.
Well, actually, Zay Alexander got the game ball. Mm. How about that? If you look at the Pro Football Focus ratings, Zay Alexander graded the highest out of any defensive player on LSU's team. Whit Weeks was two, but Zay Alexander was huge. He was coming back from a concussion. He's only played in a couple of games this season as he was returning from an ACL, so he wasn't there for the USC game. And he was a difference maker. I don't know if Trey Harris was 100%. He's the star wide receiver for Ole Miss. He did have a touchdown catch in the game, a terrific play to make up for that drop pass that he had earlier in the game. But the fact that LSU's corners played as well as they did, Ashton Stamps and Zay Alexander, I mean, it's part of the reason why LSU didn't give up 55 points this time around and 706 yards of offense. The LSU defensive secondary played really well, and Brian Kelly was true to his word. He said it after the South Alabama game that they were going to find three guys that as far as to play that safety positions, and they were going to go with those three guys. And Jarden Gilbert, Sage Ryan, and Major Burns played 95% of the snaps on defense. So they went with those three guys along with Stamps and Alexander at cornerback. And I thought those guys, once again, played great. It wasn't perfect. I mean, there was a 50-yard touchdown run in there, and Ole Miss moved the ball quite well. But again, it was kind of a bend but don't break style of defense, and it really paid off. And then in overtime, I mean, Ole Miss was back to, I mean, they had to kick a 57-yard field goal, and somehow they made it. But still, that was terrific what LSU's defense did.
And to be clear, I'm not saying that LSU won because of Ole Miss's mistakes or anything like that. Because, look, let's face it, Garrett Nussmeier did have some times where he was not playing his best.
No, I mean, he completed less than 50% of his passes. And in today's day and age of football, and when you're completing less than 50% of your passes, and LSU really didn't have a running game in this contest. Mm-hmm. They never were able to get Caden Durham or Josh Williams on track. A couple of decent runs, but most of the – and there were times that I thought that they were just bailing out on the run game. They just like, you know what, it's not happening. And then Nussmeier, who did have time to throw, one of our concerns going into the game, and I wrote about it at WWL.com, was Ole Miss came into that contest leading the nation in sacks with 24. The Rebels had zero sacks in that game. I mean, Nussmeier had time to throw. He just wasn't hitting his receivers. But, man, when he needed to make some plays, he did. And I said it after the USC game, and a lot of LSU fans were disappointed. And my two big takeaways from that game is, going back to USC, is that the defense is better than it was a year ago, and you'll always have a chance to win football games with Garrett Nussmeier as your quarterback. And we saw that play out against South Carolina, and again, we saw that play out again here with even though LSU falls behind by double digits in both games, Nussmeier is able to stay the course, stay patient in there, and eventually deliver the big passes that they needed to get delivered. I mean, some of that touchdown pass to Aaron Anderson, he throws three quarters. I mean, just a three-quarter delivery to Anderson, and he zips it in there. I mean, just that's NFL stuff. What you saw out of Nussmeier, and Brian Kelly said it afterwards. It was his biggest growth that he's had in a single game during his time at LSU was in that game, and I'm sure Garrett Nussmeier learned a lot about himself too in that game.
What I think is so encouraging is that they are improving week to week
and going in the
right direction. All right, Jeff Palermo, we'll pick it up. We come back and we'll talk about what Brian Kelly had to say about the decision not to go for two. I thought it was interesting after the game when he was talking to the ABC reporter. He probably said the same thing to Gordy Rush. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, 722 Traffic Now, WWL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. You go to WWL.com, they got a great column, a great story from him about the LSU game. So when it comes to the two-point conversion, I got to admit, I was screaming, go for it, end this thing, end it. But Brian Kelly had some interesting things to say after, I presume he told Gordy Rush the same thing about why he decided to go for two, he decided to not go for two.
Well, I think you got to also go back in time here a little bit, because in 2022, when LSU beat Alabama, they decided to go for two once they had the opportunity and they were able to connect. But he felt like his team had battled. And again, they did, the only time they took the lead in this game was when Kyren Lacy scored the winning touchdown pass. I mean, think about it. They were trailing the entire game. They got down 10-0. And he felt that his team had battled so hard to get back, he didn't want to put it all on one play to determine whether to win or lose. So give Brian Kelly credit there. He went with, I mean, maybe the analytics tell you to do something different. Because what I was thinking as LSU was marching down the field there on that final touchdown drive, or on the game-tying touchdown drive, was that was a long drive. Ole Miss's defense was on the field for a long time. So part of your thinking is, hey, that Ole Miss team is a little tired, dejected after allowing two conversions on fourth down. Why don't you try to strike now while the iron is hot? But Brian Kelly looked at it a little differently, saying, hey, we have battled in this game. We have stuck with it. Let's not put all our chips in the middle of the table right here. Let's go into overtime. Let's see what happens. LSU's defense is playing well, especially when Ole Miss gets in the red zone. Maybe we can hold them to a field goal, and that's exactly what happened.
You know what I heard him tell Molly McGrath was that we felt as though and the same thing that you just said, basically, we wanted to give our team played hard. We wanted to give them a chance to win it. I interpreted that as the defense. It's like, you know what?
Yes.
The defense played hard. I'm going to show them I got confidence in them. I'm going to give them a chance to win this game. And I think that says a lot going forward. You?
Well, it's just it's a huge turnaround from where it was a season ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked about it in my article. You, 706 total yards last year, the 55 points, the 34 missed tackles. Mm-hmm. It's what led to a complete overhaul of the defensive coaching staff last year. And it really was Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy that year, but the signature game of that season was the Ole Miss loss in late September, because it set the stage for the rest of the year that LSU's defense was no good and there was no chance. Remember, they had to bring Pete Jenkins out of retirement and bring him up to LSU to teach the defensive linemen where to line up. I mean, it was that bad. And to see where they've come, and again, as I mentioned in the last segment, far from perfect. This is not a top 25 defense in the country or anything like that.
But they're getting better.
They are getting better. They could put pressure on the quarterback. Braden Swinson is Mike Dottillo knows more about this than I do, but he looks like a first-round pick to me. I mean, he's got over seven sacks on the season. Whit Weeks has just flourished. We talked about Zy Alexander, Ashton Stamps. There's Greg Penn, the glue of the defense, as Brian Kelly called him. I mean, there's just a lot more to work with this defense compared to a year ago, but still a long way to go here. Two tough road games coming up at Arkansas and A&M.
But I see no evidence, no indication at all that LSU is going to take anybody or anything for granted and that they're not going to do anything but continue to work hard and improve. Thoughts?
No doubt about that. But we've seen it in college football. Anybody can beat anybody here over these next few weeks. So would not be surprised, Tommy. I'm not trying to damper anybody's spirits. Would not be surprised that LSU splits these two road games coming up. Win-loss, loss-win, either way, against A&M and Arkansas.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it, as always. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Quick break. We come back. We're going to take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Monday morning markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, here on WWL. All right, here we go, 7:43, 17 till 8. Time for Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. How you doing, Mark? Happy Monday.
And to you, sir, how are you doing?
I'm good. Well, I'm good after LSU, not so good after the Saints, but that's how it is. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down, right?
Okay, so what do you think about at least 2 days this week, and I'm speaking for up here where I am, the lows are in the 40s.
Oh, very nice.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Thursday and Friday.
That's on the North Shore?
Wednesday. It is.
That's in Covington.
Really? I checked it this morning. 44 and like 47.
Well, there you go.
Isn't that nice? Isn't that, for for a change. That's it. You got to pump the hose on yourself as soon as that happens.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Tell me what's going on with CPI, PPI.
Well, you know, Tom, last week, first of all, let me say, it seems like whatever's happening in the markets, they're taking the participants and probably more the institutional people than the retail people. What they're taking is as decent news, and they're pushing markets higher. And I think, you know, the Dow closed at another record last week after the inflation news came out. I'll get to that in a second. But it's, you know, after everything is being weighed, it seems like, okay, the Fed is going to do just what it needs to do. All these things have to come true at once. It's like it's going to curb inflation. It's not going to raise interest rates, but it's going to continue to lower interest rates to ease the market, the pain on the market that they caused a couple of years ago. They are going to engineer a soft landing, which includes us not getting into a recession, and the unemployment rate is going to stay reasonably tame. It's like all that's going to happen, and I'm convinced that that's what they're interested in, and we're all interested in. But as far as, you know, are they going to be able to engineer all these things in an election year and everything else going on? We've got wars to worry about and you know, rapidly changing energy prices potentially and all these things. But it's like, well, what else would account for the Dow hitting all-time highs? And for the back to the retail people like you and me, it's like, okay, you look at your 401k, and you say, what's going on? Oh, I'm pleasantly surprised. Look at that. And what it generally does, it invokes what's called the wealth effect. People look and they say, well, after all this is going on, I'm still being rewarded with decent returns in my portfolio, and I feel wealthier because I am. And maybe I could, you know, take that trip that I wanted to, or buy this new, you know, whatever we need at the house. And because our investments are performing in a way that we'll have money that we'll need, and we're providing for our retirement. So wealth effect tends to be very powerful in the markets. And this week, retail sales are coming out. I'm going to have to backtrack on this. Retail sales are coming out for September. And they expected to be up 0.3%, so that is 3.6% up for the year. And just last month, they were up only 0.1%. So either we've got some enthusiasm that's been revitalized, as I was saying, into the markets, and maybe that'll happen with the retail sales. But backing up a second, we had the consumer price index for September come out, and the producer price index for September as well. So last week it came out. So the CPI doubled. They expected to come in at 0.1, and it came in at 0.2. So these numbers are very small. Nothing to be afraid of. We've seen them go back and forth like this. I don't think the price indexes are accelerating, so to speak, that they're going to start registering larger and larger numbers. So Wall Street kind of took that in stride. It's like if it's up 0.1%, that's a 1.2% annual rate, well below the Fed's proclaimed target of 2% on an annual rate. And this was up 0.2%. So that's a 2.4% annual rate. So, again, it's like, okay, inflation at a retail level is I wish it would go down. I wish we'd have a couple of negative numbers there that prices would actually fall. But we're not there yet, but at least it's tame, and the Fed's going to take credit for that. All the interest rate increases that it did, they stopped in July, not in 24, 23, and they just left well enough alone until we saw our interest rate drop at that last meeting. Out comes the PPI the day after producer prices, and it was supposed to be up by 0.1%, and it came in flat, zero. Producer prices haven't risen, so says the PPI. So that's good news. The combination of which I think was a lot of enthusiasm for the markets, and they did what I was explaining before. They set new highs. But on the what's also in the news that seems to be ignored, Tommy, that all of I did a piece with Dave Cohen over last week about, you know, the layoffs and companies aren't hiring and they're not firing, but we've had enough announcements about layoffs, and Boeing came out just last week. Boeing to lay off 10% of its workforce. They're going to report a quarterly loss and on lower sales. We also had the first time jobless claims that jumped to its highest level in more than a year. I would think that would bring the market a little bit of pause, but it didn't. You know, so the people that are filing unemployment claims for the first time. That's the highest level in more than a year. What's going to come out this week? Well, we have industrial production that expected to be down. Capacity utilization, how we're using our resources for output, that's expected to be down. Business inventories are expected to be down, as is housing starts and building permits expected to be. All that's coming out this week, coupled with some of the negative numbers that came out last week, we're going to see if that's going to move the markets at all. At least it should give it pause. We shouldn't be hitting new highs again and again, because I think that's, you know, as soon as this, if this market starts to trip up a little bit, if unemployment begins to rise and so on, I think then we'd have a long way to fall. But mortgage rates posted their biggest jump in more than 6 months. The 10-year Treasury, which is carefully watched by the market, it rose back up to over 4%, which it had fallen when the anticipated moves by the Fed were going to be more aggressive. They were expected to lower interest rates more for the rest of the year. And I think that's been put on pause, too, because of all that's going on. And I think they're backing off against that employment report that was released a couple of weeks ago, higher than normal. And, Tom, you just got a lot of – there's been enough economic news, but it's cross currents. You'll get a big stretch of disappointing ingredients in the market. Then you'll have a couple of items that'll get everybody's attention. And look at this shiny object over here that tends to be encouraging. But put them all together, and it seems like the minuses are outweighing the pluses, but the market continues to go higher. The Fed meets in 24 days, and there's an 86% chance of them lowering rates by 25 basis points. Everybody in the market is off of, just about everybody, is off of another 50 basis point lowering, which was deeply anticipated just a couple of weeks ago. And with all this news coming out, I think it put the Fed on pause on really what to do for the rest of the year.
So when you say, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. It's Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. I'm just still trying to get a handle on, I know it's mixed, but who's it good for? Who's it bad for? Is it good? It's bad with inflation, and I don't think prices are going to come down. The inflation rate may be coming down. But then if it's good for the 401k, does that mean it's only good if you take your gains out? And if you do, what's that going to do with Wall Street? It's complicated. Mark will help us when we come back. 504-260-1870. If you have any questions or comments, traffic now, WWL. 7:56 and a half. Quickly back to Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, Monday Morning Markets with Mark. So, Mark, I'm trying to figure out inflation. The rate is down, but the prices are not down. Will they come down? And if not, does that mean people take their gains from their 401k cash out? And if that happens, what happens to the stock market? And if I might add on another question, then that means you're going to have more money chasing the same amount of goods, which is going to make inflation worse. Am I wrong on any of this or not?
Well, let me, for on your inflation thing, you're right. It's been going up by smaller amounts. And we were talking about every now and then, like PPI over the past couple of years have had a couple of negative indicators. That mm-hmm. means that prices actually went down, at least on a wholesale level. Mm-hmm. And the Fed would say, well, if we really want to knock inflation down or knock price, physically knock the prices down, you're going to need negative numbers. Meaning when they go out and buy that basket of goods and report what the collective price is, that the prices would have fallen. And if you recall, we were talking about, because they were, well, we're going to have a 6% unemployment rate. Well, that'll knock prices down because people won't be working and they can't buy things. Well, part of the soft landing is that we're going to have these incremental moves up on inflation. They're very small, 0.1% and 0.2%. But we're going to keep everybody working, and that's better for a healthy economy. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the amount of negative news, I think, should have given the markets a little bit more pause than it did. And it's hitting these highs. And as far as taking money out of the 401k, I'm not advocating timing the market, because mm-hmm. you and I have been through that a long time. Right. You know, it's a fool's errand. So it's just what we have been saying over the course of the year, this back and forth with the direction, guessing the direction of interest rate. We've been playing this song since March. Mm-hmm. They finally lowered, but immediately it was like, well, maybe you shouldn't have lowered, all these second guesses. And I meant to say 86% chance that it'll lower by 25 basis points. The other 14%, they're saying no change. Mm-hmm. So some people believe, and not so much the insignificant amount, is that the Fed is not going to do anything for the rest of the year with respect to rates. So for people that were trying to save money, I mean, if you're looking at your investments, just know what you own and understand what it is. And if for the refinances and to save major money over interest rates that were up last year, you kind of missed the low point. If we were greedy and saying, oh, it's going to go lower, you missed it because these rates have kicked back up. But that's, you and I cover it every Friday, Tommy. It's the easiest way to save some money. It's money on the table. And now that rates have fallen, that would be the time to take advantage of it. I mean, nobody knows what tomorrow is going to bring, but the rates have changed significantly since a year ago. So that would be a place to just save some money. It's free money to you. It's taking it out of financial institution.
Thank you,
Mark. Just got to keep watching.
So, all right, sir.
Talk to you later.
We will. We'll talk to you Friday when you help us manage our money. Mark Roser, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We'll talk about housing in the city when we come back. It is 8:15. Got a cold front coming through on Wednesday. Mark Rose all excited about it, and rightfully so. So highs today of 89, 86 tomorrow. Then tomorrow night, Wednesday morning, lows of 52 North Shore, 58 South Shore. Highs Wednesday only of 70 degrees, sunny and breezy. That's the high temperature in the afternoon. Then a chilly start on Thursday. Lows of 44 North Shore, 56 South. And that's going to continue into Friday, and then it warms up Saturday and Sunday. But even by Sunday, highs are only near 80. So finally, thankfully, mercifully, it turns fall. That also means election time. And we're going to spend an hour talking about a proposal that was on it is on the ballot that would direct 2% of the city's general fund budget to affordable housing and homeowner programs. So first up is BGR, and then we'll talk to Leslie Harris, who authored the legislation. So with that, we welcome in Rebecca Mowbray, President and CEO of BGR. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Tommy. Thanks for having us on this morning.
Thank you. And Nate Pabon Trinidad, I say that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Hi, Tommy. How are
you? Hey, Nate, good. Trinidad, BGR Research Analyst. Thanks for taking the time. You guys divide this up however you want because I can't see you, but so I don't know who's going to talk when, but tell me initially, I guess, what this legislation is all about, then we'll see what BGR thinks about it.
Sure, Tommy, I'll take that one.
Okay.
So on November 5th, voters in Orleans Parish will have a question on the ballot about asking them whether they would like to change the city charter in New Orleans to dedicate the equivalent of 2% of the city budget each year to housing initiatives for low and moderate income New Orleans residents. And if approved, this would take effect in January of next year. And starting with the 2026 budget, it would create new appropriation for housing estimated at about $17 million. And right now, the city doesn't, it contributes one-time money and also some federal money to housing programs, but there's very little recurring local revenue that goes into housing.
So this would
greatly increase that amount.
I'm sorry. So this would be akin to when we talk about the legislature and things they can cut and things they can't cut. If this is approved by voters, this would mean that the city, when they during the budgeting process, couldn't cut this. They would have to dedicate 2% toward that. Accurate?
Yes. You could kind of think of it like, you know, a city charter is kind of like a constitution for a city. So just like at the state level, there are a number of things in the state constitution that require funding. This would sort of do the same thing at the local level.
Gotcha. So, Nate, what did BGR find again about this? And what do you think would be the best policy here? What does BGR think?
So BGR found that overall housing investment is needed in the city. You know, the city faces a very acute housing problem, but the charter amendment is not the correct way to do it. As Becky mentioned, since the city charter works as a constitution, it would be hard to remove without another vote. And instead, BGR suggests strengthening a backup fund, which the council has put in place as a placeholder. If voters reject the proposition, this would come into effect next year as well. It would dedicate $20 million adjusted for inflation and can't decrease. And this money, the downside to this money is that it could be changed or eliminated because it's passed through ordinance and not charter. But however, even though this would mean less new local money into housing, it would also mean greater budget flexibility for the city. And BGR believes that a city that has an adaptable budget can, you know, prioritize different needs, including housing, in light of other budget challenges.
So to say it another way, it wouldn't be flexible enough where the city council wouldn't have a choice, and there could be something that happens for whatever reason that would be a more pressing need that they wouldn't be able to attend to?
Yes. Overall, we find that, you know, the only way you would change the charter amendment's 2% dedication would be through a unanimous vote of the council during a declared state of emergency. And, you know, while this current council has been very, very friendly and they voted unanimously on a lot of things, that's still a very high bar in terms of, you know, getting everyone in a council meeting to vote to overturn this dedication, as opposed to the more flexible backup fund, which the city could allocate new local money as revenues allow and as the budget situation allows. It's just about allowing the city to tackle different needs as, you know, future challenges evolve and change.
All right, let me take a break. Rebecca, hold that thought, please, because I got a break for traffic. You can pick it up right there when we come back, all right?
Thanks.
Okay, Rebecca Mowbray, sorry about that, president and CEO of BGR, and Nate Pabon Trinidad, BGR Research Analyst, Bureau of Governmental Research, talking about the proposed charter amendment to the city charter that would dedicate 2% of the budget toward housing needs in the city for low to moderate income residents, but they're saying that the BGR says that maybe this is not the best way to go about it. Leslie Harris, who authored the legislation, obviously feels differently. We'll talk to her in the second half of the hour. More with BGR when we come back. 821 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about a proposed change of the city charter. The election is November 5th. We're going to talk about early voting with the Secretary of State, Nancy Landry, in the 9 o'clock hour, but first, it's back to Rebecca Mowbray and Nate Pabon Trinidad, both at the Bureau of Governmental Research. Rebecca is the president and CEO. Nate is a BGR research analyst. Rebecca, you wanted to make a point about this before we went to break.
Yes, thanks, Tommy. So what I wanted to say is that BGR certainly found the need for additional investment in housing. It's gotten a lot more expensive for people to put a roof over their heads. However, what we did find is that you don't need to go to the extent of what is being proposed with changing the city charter in order to accomplish that. We found 29 other cities that have, dedicated like housing trust funds sort of things. And the vast, vast majority of them fund it through either ordinance or annual appropriation. And fortunately, in this case, the city of New Orleans had the foresight, in case the charter amendment failed, to also create something that's known as the backup ordinance. And we at BGR believe that that is actually the superior vehicle to handle housing investment in our city. And that's because it's more adaptable. Once you put something in the city charter, it's basically there permanently. It's very, very hard to take it out. And no one knows what the future holds and what challenges our city may face. And it's really important for city council members and future administrations to have the ability to confront you know, to meet funding needs as they can. And with the backup fund, basically, we disagree with the idea of changing the charter, and we believe that the city's housing goals can be accomplished through ordinance. And the reason why that is significant is because it would allow the city some flexibility that if there were other things that came along in an emergency or some new situation that we can't even anticipate, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, that they would have the flexibility to do that. And we already know that revenues for the city are flat, and there are funding needs on the horizon, such as money for the New Orleans jail, money for the firefighters' pension, paying on an ongoing basis for raises for the city, for city workers, and also making sure that the city is paying appropriately for drainage. And we just think that it's better if the city approached this through ordinance, because it gives them the flexibility to adjust if they need it. And even if with doing it in ordinance, the city could dedicate much more new money than it has in the past to address housing issues, but it would be a more flexible, adaptable approach.
What would you say to the people that say, well, this makes it politics proof, where this makes sure that the people that are low income or that need affordable housing are going to get the appropriate help that they need?
What I would say to that is just simply the fact of the council putting a backup fund in ordinance is a creating an ordinance is a public commitment to fund housing affordability in New Orleans. And that is way more than what we've done in the past. And the experience of other cities suggests that that is sufficient, that you don't need to go to the extreme of putting something in the city charter. And think about this, Tommy. If the council has passed an ordinance to dedicate new money to housing through ordinance, if the city council were to back off from that, voters and citizens would expect an answer on that, that there would be a political price to pay if they backed off on it, or at least to explain what it was, and there would be pressure for them to come back next year and, you know, renew any like money and, you know, pick up again with putting more money into housing. So we think there's still a political commitment there through ordinance that would be significant.
Thank you so much for your time, Rebecca Mowbray, President and CEO of BGR, Nate Pabon Trinidad, BGR Research Analyst. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll see what Leslie Harris has to say about her proposed charter amendment when she joins us. 8:31, minute late, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday morning, October 14th. We've already heard from the Bureau of Governmental Research about the proposed change of the city's charter to provide a direct 2% of the city's general fund, affordable housing and homeowner programs. We heard what they think about it. Now let's see what the author of the charter change has to say. And that's Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm great, Tommy. How are you?
I'm good. I got to check on the puppies as always. Are they behaving?
They are behaving and they are just wild right now. So they're ready to get out and start walking again.
Okay. I don't know how they can be behaving and wild both at the same time.
You could have two things at once.
Sounds like you might be fudging for them a little bit, Mom, but maybe I'm wrong. Hey, let's talk about this charter change. Why is it so important that it be a charter change and not just an ordinance thing or a backup ordinance, as BGR said?
Sure. So let me back up for a second. Sure. I think BGR and the entire council, and let me be clear that the entire council is backing this charter amendment. BGR and the council, and I think everybody in New Orleans understands that we're in a housing crisis, including an insurance crisis.
Let me back you up a little bit more. And while we're talking that, explain that for people that don't understand what the crisis is and what it looks like actually.
Sure. So the city just did a study on the housing ecosystem within the city of New Orleans. We know that people pay an exorbitant amount percentage-wise of their income for rent. So many of our citizens are rent burdened, meaning they pay over 30% in rental prices of their income. Housing, same thing. I mean, you and I both know, living in New Orleans, that insurance prices have gone up. My personal insurance went up exorbitantly, and we had to shop that around. And all of that is because we have a declining amount of housing stock. Our insurance prices are going up. We can go around the corner and see blighted houses. And this charter amendment, this dedication of funds that we already pay in taxes to housing, can help alleviate that crisis by investing in things like fortified roofs, by increasing the amount of housing that is safe and sturdy. And all of this can be funded by the city. We've never funded it before as a city, but for this current council. And I did listen to BGR, and one thing that we disagree about is that this should be a political issue, and it's not a political issue. This really is something that impacts every citizen of the city of New Orleans. A charter amendment means that it is not subject to the whims of political fiat. And let's be clear, this entire city council is up for reelection in about a year and a half. So we could get a new city council that says, guess what, we do not want to abide or invest in housing. And they can easily overturn the ordinance that is the backup. By charter amendment, we're enshrining this into our city charter, and it is not subject to the political whims of the next group of council people or the next leadership that comes into office.
What about the flexibility issue that they brought up?
Sure. So we have built into the ordinance that will effectuate the charter amendment once it passes a emergency provision, so that if there's a declared emergency, which can be a financial emergency, a weather emergency, that we can suspend the dedication of resources by the 2%. And so there is an out if there's a declared emergency. But what I want people to understand, and I think what this council has acknowledged, is that this housing crisis is an emergency, which is why we are looking to dedicate 2% of the city's budget to housing and insurance issues in our city. And again, this is the first time in the first council that's ever dedicated city money to these issues. And I think that it's so important, and this council thinks that it's so important, that we are asking the voters to enshrine this into our city charter.
All right, early voting starts on October 18th. In the next hour, we're going to talk to the Secretary of State, Nancy Landry, about all of that. But that's why we wanted to have you on this week, to talk about it before the early voting began. We're going to take a break. We come back. I want to ask you, Leslie, what it's going to look like when this 2% of what this money is going to actually go toward and who's going to benefit from it. Leslie Harris, our guest, New Orleans City Council member, spending the hour talking about this 2% charter change that's proposed that would enshrine, if you will, guarantee 2% of the city's general budget to affordable housing and homeowner programs. We'll define affordable housing and homeowner programs when we come back. 850, 10 till 9, it's time for traffic now on WWL. At 8:55, quickly back, Tommy Tucker, WWO, quickly back to Councilmember Leslie Harris about this charter amendment. You'll be able to start voting on October the 18th, early voting to guarantee 2% of the city's general budget every year goes to affordable housing and homeowner programs. Let me get to this text if I can, Leslie. It says, we have an agency in the city that holds millions of dollars for housing, and it's a bureaucratic nightmare. We don't trust the city to do the right thing with the money. What would you say to that person? And I don't know what they're talking about.
Sure. So they're probably talking about the Office of Community Development. That agency within the city administers federal funding. What we're talking about is city funding. And the way that we've written the effectuating ordinances is that the New Orleans Redevelopment Authority and Finance New Orleans, both of which are 30 and 40-year-old agencies, will administer the funding for the Housing Trust Fund. These are agencies with proven track records of providing things like soft seconds to workforce, people needing workforce housing, supplying money for fortified roofs, redeveloping projects like the Louisiana Firehouse that I was excited to do the ribbon cutting for, on Friday. So these two agencies will be the people who administer the Housing Trust Fund outside of the Office of Community Development.
And some other things, I guess, that this 2% is going to go to in terms of affording affordable housing and homeowner programs, like how big is the need now and where? How do you determine priorities with what gets funded first with the 2%?
Sure, that's a great question. So we have noted three areas of need, the creation of affordable rental housing, the maintenance of affordable rental housing, and that includes workforce housing. So when we say affordable, we also mean workforce. And then finally, the creation of homeownership opportunities. Each of those three areas will automatically get 15% of the 2%, around $2.1 million per year invested in those three priority areas. The other 85% will be administered by NORA and Finance New Orleans, depending on the economic need of the day. So, for example, we know we're in an insurance crisis. Those two agencies, guided by an advisory committee, can determine that, hey, we need to invest the majority of this money back into fortified roof programs or programs to allow homeowners to shore up their property so that they can get the proper insurance, which, again, benefits every single New Orleanian, because if we know that homes are fortified, if we know that they are safe structurally, then all of our insurance prices should drop.
And when you say workforce housing, you're talking about?
First responders, teachers, folks who are in the service industry, people who, as we talked about before, Tommy, who live right now in areas like Kenner and Oswego and Gretna, because they can't afford to live in city center. And so what we're doing with this Housing Trust Fund is ensuring that our first responders, our teachers, our workforce can live within the city of New Orleans, can get back and forth to their jobs easily because we know that public transportation is unreliable, can get back to their children and help them with homework or getting them to school programs. This is a reinvestment in our citizens. And so when BGR talks about, you know, the political fiat and that there is a political mandate that will go forward, I just disagree with that, especially since BGR backed things like dedication of funding for the Office of Inspector General and the Independent Police Monitor, and said nothing about a dedication of tax funding for that being somehow hand-strapping the city council. So again, I think this is a reinvestment into our people, our community, and I really hope that people vote for it. We have 21 days until the election, and please just make sure to register to vote.
20 seconds left. What happens if it doesn't pass?
If it doesn't pass, we do have a backup ordinance that would dedicate about $5 million of new money, but would also look to the money that we already get. So by passing the charter amendment, we are ensuring that there is a steady stream of city dedicated money that goes to affordable housing, not federal funds that can dwindle, but city money.
Thank you, Councilmember Harris. Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council Member. Is there a website people can go to find out more about this?
Yeah, they can go to yestonolahousing.com, yestonolahousing.com. It has FAQs, it has information about how this will be administered, and you can find all about it. You can also email me directly, and I'm happy to sit and porch talk with anybody who wants to talk about this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Nancy Landry will join us when we come back. Secretary of State, talk about early voting. Flying through another morning, Monday morning, October 14th, and we got a big hour for you. We're going to talk to Nancy Landry in a little bit, Louisiana Secretary of State. Early voting starts October the 18th, so we'll make sure you get all registered up and all that stuff and ready to vote. Then we're going to talk to the president and CEO of the City Park Conservancy, Rebecca Dietz. They are having some meetings about the future long-term planning for City Park. And I would ask you can text me at 504-260-1870. What would you like to see more of in City Park or less of in City Park? And then we're going to talk about the LSU football that's available. You can join WWL tomorrow. We're taking a show on the road, the shows on the road, for Medicare Enrollment Day. Tomorrow morning, myself, along with Dave Cohen and Scoot, I'll be live from Metairie at the People's Health Medicare Center on Vets from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. whole goal is to make your life easy. If you need to make a decision about Medicare for yourself or somebody you love, come on out and see us. Medicare experts will be on hand to help you make an informed decision, and People's Health experts will host educational seminars at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. But they will have people available to talk to you before that. Plus, we'll serve up coffee and donuts in the morning, give away World War II Museum tickets, and help you take the confusion out of your Medicare decision, which can be daunting. Come on out tomorrow. I'll be there. Dave Cohen, Scoot, Medicare Enrollment Day, Tuesday, October 15th. Starts at 6, runs till 4 at People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets near Causeway, right next to Party City on WWL. We look forward to meeting you. With that, we welcome in Secretary of State Nancy Landry. Good morning, Madam Secretary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well today. How are you?
I'm okay. I want to talk about early voting and registration and all that stuff. today is the deadline for some registration, is it not?
It's tomorrow, actually. The deadline to register online is tomorrow, October 15th, to vote in the November 5th election.
And what's necessary to register online?
You need your Louisiana driver's license and just, you know, follow the instructions at govote.com. And it's very easy. It's never been easier to register to vote in Louisiana or to vote in Louisiana.
Tell me what's going on with early voting.
Early voting starts Friday the 18th. That's this Friday. This is a big week for elections. We have the deadline to register to vote and the beginning of early voting. For presidential elections now, we have 10 days of early voting. So it will be October 18th through the 29th, except not on Sundays. We don't early vote on Sundays.
Tell me.
It's 8:30 to 6. 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And how do you find out? Is there a website where people can go to find out in their parish where they go and so where the
vote? Absolutely. We have govote.com. That's G-E-A-U-X, vote.com. Or we recommend people download our award-winning mobile app, and that's the GoVote app, G-E-A-U-X, vote. You can find your early voting locations and also your sample ballot.
How does it, what's the situation with poll commissioners? Are you in need of those or not?
We're always in need of more poll commissioners. We have an aging population of poll commissioners who are our stalwart workers. We couldn't do elections without them. But many of them are deciding to retire. They're aging out. They're in their 80s, many of them, and they're just ready to hang it up now. And we need some younger people to step up and take their place. And so we're always looking for new poll commissioners. It's a great way to learn about elections. It's a wonderful way to connect with your community. And you just contact your local clerk of court if you're interested in doing that. It's a great way to make a little bit of money before Christmas as well.
What is it like to be a poll commissioner? The day in the life of a poll commissioner, is there a training period or what, Nancy?
There's a short training period. It's usually done in August and September, but they do allow some clerks have an online training for people who sign up late if they still need commissioners. And it's, you know, I think just a couple of hours, maybe even an hour. And then once you're certified to be a commissioner, you get picked in a drawing to be the commissioner, and you work usually close to your home at your own precinct. And it's a long day. You have to be there before the polls open and stay until the end. You check voters in. You check their IDs. There are different duties. Some people check them in and have them sign the book. Others, you know, walk them to the machines. It just depends on what the duties they're assigned are. But it's a long day, but it's very rewarding. You see your whole community, and you learn about how secure and safe our elections are. And it gives you a lot of confidence in the voting system as well.
Well, you mentioned money for Christmas. What's the remuneration for that?
I think it's $200 for a regular commissioner. It's more if you're the commissioner in charge, which I think you have to have a little bit of experience mm-hmm. to be the commissioner in charge. But it's $200, and it's right before Christmas, so it's a great way to make some extra Christmas money.
Let's talk about safety and security of elections, I guess specifically early voting. At one point, something was made of that, and I don't want to bring politics into this at all, but let's just talk about the importance and the need for early voting. For people who would say, why can't we just vote on election day itself? You would say what?
I'd say it's safe and secure to vote on early voting in person. You show your ID when you come in, and it's just the same as voting on election day, in my opinion. So just get it done in case you get sick on election day, or there's a big game, or there's something, you know, something comes up and you end up getting distracted and you can't vote. So I always like to vote early. That's my favorite way to vote. But we have some of the safest and securest elections in the nation. We're ranked in the top 10 in the nation by the Heritage Foundation, and first in the South by the Electoral Integrity College. And so, you know, we're known for doing elections right in Louisiana. So you can vote with confidence in Louisiana, whether you vote early in person or on election day in person, or if you're absent those 2 days or for some reason can't vote in person, you can also vote absentee if you have one of the excuses that would allow you to vote absentee.
Yeah, I was getting to that. The difference between early voting and absentee voting is early voting, you can vote early, but you need to vote in person. Absentee voting is you do it by mail?
That's right. You do it by mail, or you request a ballot. They send the ballot to you. The registrar sends the ballot to you. And then you can deliver it back in person to the registrar of voters, or you can mail it back. But it is done, you know, on a paper ballot through the mail. The ballot is sent to you in the mail.
Tell me about who qualifies for absentee voting.
We have 12 excuses for absentee voting. It's the people over 65, people who are disabled, people who were in the hospital, on jury duty, in the military, and, you know, things like that. If you're going to be out of town for both early voting and election day, you qualify to get an absentee ballot as well. And we encourage people, if you're going to vote absentee, that you do it as early as possible because of the delay with the mail. The mail, we have no control over the U.S. mail, and even though our deadlines go all the way up to you can return your ballot the day before election day, we don't recommend that because of the unreliability of the mail system.
For those that, you know, people believe whatever they want to believe, that, and again, this goes to the integrity of elections in Louisiana, because I know as Secretary of State, that's all you can speak to, I would presume, or maybe not, I don't know, but openness to fraud or whatever when it comes to absentee balloting or early voting. There's no indication that any of that has ever taken place on a large scale, is there?
I can only speak to what happens in Louisiana.
Yeah,
and in Louisiana, no. We always encourage people to vote in person when you can. We think that's the safest and most secure way to vote. And you know, ensures that your ballot is going to be counted. You're not depending on the mail. But you know, we've never had any large-scale problem in Louisiana with fraud. So we have a very secure system with lots of checks and balances at every stage of the process. We had an audit after the 2020 election. A Louisiana legislative auditor, nonpartisan auditor, audited our presidential election in 2020 and found that we had safe and secure measures in place to ensure that our election was held with integrity.
So there are legitimate reasons to absentee vote. I guess the point I'm trying to make for people that are over 65, disabled or whatever, that cannot get to the polls, military members, etc.
Right, that's right. We do have people who legitimately need to who need to absentee vote. They're not going to be in the state, you know, during early voting or election day, or they're disabled or elderly or in the hospital, you know, in a sequestered jury. There are multiple circumstances, and we have 12 reasons that allow people to absentee vote if necessary.
So election day is November 5th. Early voting starts on October 18th. If there is...
That's right, this Friday.
So if there is a runoff, it goes to December 7th, or is a congressional election on? I'm confused.
Congress would go to a runoff in December, but not the presidential.
No, I realize that.
Presidential,
But there's not a separate congressional election that happens on November 5th.
Right.
Yes.
It's November 5th for everything that, but it's the primary for the congressional, and then the runoff would be in December if there would be a need for a runoff in any of the races.
What about stickers? I want to know about the Go Vote stickers. What do those look like?
Great question. We have a great sticker this year. The artist is a Louisiana native. It's William Joyce. He's an Academy Award-winning illustrator and short filmmaker out of Shreveport. And it's a dapper little crawfish doing, you know, a little happy walk after voting. And it's, I think everybody's going to love it. It's really a great sticker. A little different from the ones we've had in the past and just, you know, very happy and cheerful. And we love it.
Well, you can't go wrong with a voting sticker. I love mine. Tell me quickly about, I guess, where people can go to get more information about all this, Secretary.
They can go to govote.com. That's GEAUX vote.com. Or they can download our free award-winning Go Vote mobile app, and that's also GEAUX Vote. It's a great app, and you can even find your sample ballot on the app.
You know, it is a dapper crawfish because he's wearing a top hat and a tuxedo and spats. You don't see many spat-wearing crawfish, do you?
We love him. We think he's great. His name is Mark DeBallet. That's what we named him.
Very nice. Anything else before we let you go? Any final thoughts?
Just everyone, if you haven't registered to vote yet for any reason and you're 18 years old or you will be 18 by November 5th, be sure to register by tomorrow. Tomorrow is the deadline, and early voting starts this Friday. Remember to go out and vote.
So if you want to vote in a presidential election, tomorrow is the deadline to register online. Accurate?
That is right.
Okay, and can you still register at your local registrar's office, or is that parish?
You can't register in person. That deadline has passed unless they would offer you an iPad to register online. But it would be easier for people to just register online themselves.
And they do that at?
GoVote.com, GEAUX vote.com.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Happy election.
Bye-bye.
Okay. 922, that's Nancy Landry, Louisiana Secretary of State. Your name doesn't have to be Landry to be in state government, but you'll fit in a lot better if it is. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Rebecca Dietz, President and CEO of City Park Conservancy, about the future of City Park. And I asked you to text me at 504-260-1870. What would you like to see more of in City Park or less? Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWO. All right, 9:28 now. We're joined by Rebecca Dietz, the president and CEO of City Park Conservancy. Good morning, Ms. Dietz. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I guess it's okay to call you Rebecca because that's your name.
Yes.
Tell me how you came to be CEO of City Park. I know you started in June, right?
Yes, I started in June. I was serving as the chief administrative officer for City Park since 2021, and I had the privilege of being offered the job of CEO in June of 2024.
And you know all about the park, and you've worked for the improvement of, I guess you have a long history going back with the park, right?
I do, a long history with City Park, and before that I was with Audubon Park.
And you're from New Orleans?
I grew up in Arkansas. I've been in New Orleans since 1999.
I'm just trying to find out a little bit about you, that's all. But you're a native New Orleanian. Tell me about what it is that you hope to do with these. I guess we're talking about a long-range planning program for City Park here. What exactly are we trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. City Park is actually required by law to operate pursuant to a master plan. And the prior master plan City Park was operating under was passed in 2005, right before Hurricane Katrina. And it offered a roadmap for the park, for investment in the park and planning and growth until about 2018. That was the intent of that prior plan. Well, most of the elements of that prior master plan have been completed in the park. They focused on the south side. A lot of the improvements you see on the south side of the park right now occurred after Hurricane Katrina. So now we're looking to the next 20, 25 years. We want to focus on the safety of the park ecology and its health. We want to ensure it's welcoming to all visitors and residents, And we want to look at new park amenities. What does the next generation of park users want to see in City Park?
If you had to talk about biggest challenges that the park faces, what would you say?
Certainly, funding will always be a challenge for City Park. City Park generates about 80% of its revenue on-site, self-generated revenue. It receives 20% of its operating budget from public sources, a tax millage and a slot tax, a state slot tax reimbursement. So funding will always be a challenge. Also just maintenance, ensuring that we are taking care of the park with the most up-to-date management standards. We have aging infrastructure and some aging ecology. Our trees are, you know, every day your trees get older. We also face issues with invasive aquatic species, wildlife. Parks face all kinds of challenges every day.
Tell me about this, the metaphor that you came up with for the making gumbo about engagement and planning, I think is brilliant. Talk about that, if you will, please.
Absolutely. You know, Tommy, City Park is such an incredible gathering place for the entire New Orleans community. It's also a collection of shared public spaces. So different user groups, people who use the park every day or use it sporadically, have to share the 1,300 acres that we call City Park. So the framework for public engagement over the next year is going to be collaborative, iterative. It's going to build on community feedback and the design work that we've done thus far. And we wanted to introduce a metaphor and concept that people in New Orleans and Louisiana would understand, which is making gumbo. The first thing we're going to do is make groceries. We're going to make sure everyone is at the table and that they have an understanding of the planning that's been done so far. Then we're going to introduce some planning concepts to the public, foundational placemaking planning. Then we're going to stir the roux and make sure we have all the right foundational base for the planning to continue. Then we're going to prep the ingredients. This is when we're going to develop programming concepts to diversify the experience a visitor can find in the park. Then we're going to mix the gumbo, bring everything together, foundational planning themes, placemaking themes, ensure that the entire community has had a voice. And then we're going to taste it. We're going to bring everyone to hopefully the final meeting and ask the community, did we get this right? And can we all agree on the future of City Park?
Have these meetings begun or when do they begin?
So we have had meetings over the last year. Mm-hmm. We paused our engagement efforts back in April to have some more in-depth engagement meetings with park users. The next big community engagement meetings will start again in December. It's really interesting. We've also put together an Ideas Youth Committee. This is specifically to engage young people in New Orleans in the planning process. And the youth committee will start this month, and the bigger public meetings will begin in December, and we will have four of them over the next year.
I'm getting some text here, if you don't mind answering a couple of questions. Somebody's wondering about usage of the park by people not from New Orleans, and is that a net plus or net minus?
Oh, I think it's a net plus. Anytime we have visitors who can enjoy our public spaces, our museums, our culture here in New Orleans, I think it's a benefit. We're going to see wear and tear and use in the park no matter what, and we welcome people from all over.
Somebody else wants to know about the biggest money generators for City Park. Did you say most of the money comes from it's self-generated or not?
It's self-generated, that's correct. Our biggest money makers at City Park are some of our fundraisers, which are coming up. Celebration in the Oaks, which is our holiday light show, is one of our largest fundraising efforts and revenue generators.
And what about the golf course? Self-funding or not?
Yes. No, the golf course is part of our self-funded revenue. Yes, we do generate revenue at the golf course. It is run by a third-party operator, but we have a revenue share with that organization.
What are some of the ideas that you've heard that people have brought forth that might be different than what's there now?
Oh, you know, interestingly, I think most of what we've heard so far is that people want to enhance what is there rather than change it dramatically. But we have overwhelmingly heard from people that they want the park to feel safe and that they can pass through the entire park and enjoy all 1,300 acres of it. So I think safety, convenience, including more bathrooms, more parking, safer areas for parking, dedicated bike or pedestrian walkways. We've also heard that every sport that happens in City Park is the fastest growing sport in America. So everyone would like to see a little bit more of their sport in City Park.
Are there pickleball courts in City Park?
Yes, we do have pickleball courts. In our tennis facility, we have pickleball as well.
Somebody texted and said revenue will always be the park issue. We should have a Woodlands Resort Hotel, a grandparent-friendly wooded resort, leveraging all the great things on City Park. Would that in any way fit into any part of the City Park
plan? We're certainly going to listen to all of the ideas that come to us through the planning process. And your listeners are correct. Revenue generation will always be top of mind at City Park. But we also want to make sure the park stays open and accessible for the entire public.
Somebody wants to know about something on the backside of the train ride during the holidays. I've not taken a train in a long time. I don't know what they're talking about. Talk about the train, I guess, that goes through City Park. When does that run?
Absolutely. It runs, I believe it runs Tuesday through Sunday. I need to probably double check that. It leaves from the amusement park. It does take a loop around the south side of the park. During Celebration in the Oaks, you can take the train through the historic oak grove on City Park Avenue, and we light up some of those trees. We light up the path. It really is a magical experience during the holidays.
And I did get a text about the softball quad that they concerned about. It's not what it used to be.
Certainly, the quad will be looked at in the planning process. It is heavily used. All different sports use the quad area. And we really are looking to do some major improvements there.
And somebody else wants to know about coyotes. Is that a big problem?
You know, coyotes is another issue that's always top of mind at City Park. We try to maintain, you know, a good balance in the park of wildlife and all that nature has to offer. But coyotes can become nuisance animals in the park. So currently we are looking at like a multi-pronged approach to address any coyote issue we have in the park.
If only get the feral hogs and the coyotes to eat each other. Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, no feral hogs so far, knock on wood.
But that would just be, man, I'm telling you, that'd be a self-solving problem. Thank you. For people who want to find out more about this or weigh in, how do they do it?
Yes, please go to NewOrleansCityPark.org. You can find out everything about the planning process. We will also make sure to spread the news far and wide on when we have public meetings and engagement opportunities. We really are looking for voices from all over to help plan the future for City Park.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Rebecca Dietz, President and CEO of City Park Conservancy, 939, 21 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 944. 16 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. It was a magical night in Tiger Stadium, the 100th anniversary of the stadium celebrated. And, man, what a game against Ole Miss, won in overtime. And, yeah, 4 hours long, a long game, a lot of reviews, everything else. But it was a magical night in Tiger Stadium. Bob Iback joins us now with Nico Sports. They got a 100th anniversary of Tiger Stadium limited edition football we're going to talk about. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Tommy, it's always a pleasure to be with you again. And I know I was tuned into that TV set all night long. What a ball game. Man. I saw a lot of college football over the weekend. As you know, I covered college football for many, many years, both as a broadcaster and a newspaper reporter. And I have to say that was one of the most exciting games I've ever seen. And to have it happen on the 100th anniversary dedication of the football stadium, which – by the way, I saw recently was ranked the number one college football stadium in the country. And we have something really, really special for LSU Tiger fans. The 100th anniversary football that we're producing, it's full size, fully licensed. They're only going to make 2,024 of them. And in a moment, I'll give out a toll-free number and website. Hey, you can get this. A portion of the proceeds will be donated to the Cox Communication Academic Center for Student Athletes. They're priced at $119.95 each. And again, I want to emphasize, only 2,024 of these footballs will ever be produced. We just started making this announcement today, so I urge people to jump on that phone number and website when I give it out in a moment. Before I do that, I want to quickly describe what you'll get on the panels of the football. Everything on those panels is embossed, which will keep it fresh looking for years to come. Each football comes with a numbered certificate of authenticity. The top panel has the 100th anniversary official logo, stadium history, stadium facts. The middle panel has more Tigers football history and championship history right next to an LSU helmet logo. And that third panel is really cool because it really brings in Tiger Stadium. It's a full-color panoramic image of the stadium taken on an aerial photograph about 2 years ago, and we stretch it from one end of that panel to the other. So here's how you can get these footballs. Again, they're $119.95 each, very limited. 2024 will be made. The toll-free number to call today is 800-345-2868. That's 1-800-345-2868. If the lines are filled, go right to the website so you won't get left out. NikoSports.com. You spell it NikoSports.com. That's NikoSports.com or 800-345-2868. And Tommy, in parting, consider this for a holiday or Christmas gift idea. You'll have it in plenty of time to give to that Tigers fan and make it a very special period there in December.
Limited edition of only 2024. I'm looking at that, the panel with the picture, the panoramic view of Tiger Stadium. That pretty well says it all.
Isn't that something? They even got the Tiger band in the middle of the field, I'm told.
Yep, it's spelling out LSU, right. And it looks like it's getting ready for the players to run out on the field. And also for people that don't know what to do with the ball, you can upgrade if you like and get the mahogany box. That's all up to you at NikoSports.com. You can find out more about it. But give me a quick recap on all of this, please, if you will, Bob.
Sure. There are only 2,024 of these footballs made. They're full-size, fully licensed. It comes with a numbered certificate of authenticity for $119.95 each. And the toll-free number to order them, 1-800-345-2868, 1-800-345-2868, or NikoSports.com, N-I-K-C-O Sports.com. I think that game will go down against Ole Miss, that the overtime win, as one of the biggest wins in team history.
And you got a ball here to commemorate it all. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate your time.
All right, Tommy, have a good day now.
You too. Bob Iback with Niko Sports. You can go to N-I-K-C-O Sports.com to find out more. Don't forget, tomorrow you can join WWL for Medicare Enrollment Day. We're going to be on the road, and this doesn't happen often in the morning. Scoot is out on the road, and Newell's out on the road. I don't get to go out often at all, but you can join WWL for Medicare Enrollment Day tomorrow. I'll be out at 6 o'clock, then Dave Cohen, and then Scoot, all broadcasting live from Metairie from People's Health Medicare Center on Vets from 6 till 4. The whole goal is to make your life easy. If you need to make a decision about Medicare, parts A, B, C, and D, which can be mind-numbing because I help somebody go through this, for yourself or somebody you love, come out and see us. They're going to have Medicare experts to help you make an informed decision, and People's Health experts will host educational seminars at 10 and 1. But they will have people there when we're there early between 6 and 10 to help you walk you through the process, and sit down with you and explain it all, answer any questions you have. If you go to the website, try to figure it out. I'm talking about the Medicare website. Again, having helped a neighbor with this, it can just make your eyes glaze over. Plus, we're going to serve up coffee and donuts in the morning, give away some World War II museum tickets. So take the confusion out of your Medicare decision. Come out and meet me, Dave Cohen, and Scoot at Medicare and Roma Day, Tuesday, October 15th. Starts with me at 6, wraps up with Scoot at 4. That's all at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets, on Causeway next to Party City, right here in WWO. We can't wait to meet you. We'll take a break, come back, chat with Dave Cohen, who's in for Newell Norman today on WWL.